I'm Ryan Kelly with TheHomeLoanExpert.com. We've all heard that mortgage interest rates have started to rise, but I'm not here to scare you like those other banks and mortgage companies. I'm still locking loans in, saving people thousands of dollars a month. TheHomeLoanExpert.com.
The Home Loan Expert, LLC.
The other team, that other national championship claiming team that puts it in lights on their stadium press box won last night. We'll get to that game.
Oh, Jimmy Bama.
There's not a more annoying fan base in all of college football than that fan base right now.
You ever dealt with Ohio State fans?
I think everyone would agree with that.
Yeah,
everyone.
But Ohio State, Alabama.
They've at least accomplished something?
Yeah, there's some fan bases that actually deserve to be that arrogant at times. Central Florida's not one of those fan bases.
Yeah, 5-3 Temple, now 5-4 Temple, a defensive team, was toe-for-toe with them at halftime. But more on that in a second. We've got to start with LT calling it yesterday on the show because it was his lock, and he literally said Southern Miss and Spain Park quarterback Nick Mullins gets his start, his first start. I actually think he plays well is what Lance said, and I'm going to take the 49ers and give that out as the lock here on the Jocks Roundtable. That was yesterday. Nick Mullins gets his start. Throws for 262, three touchdowns. Niners beat the Raiders 34-3. Did you really see that coming?
Well, I didn't see that. Here's what I will say about Nick Mullins, and I got to see him a few weeks ago when Bethard went down with an injury. You know, this is a kid that does play with a ton of confidence. And in the preseason, look, he threw a couple of picks, probably shouldn't have. But he's a guy that is in a Kyle Shanahan offense. And if you go back to when Kyle Shanahan was the offensive coordinator for the Atlanta Falcons, it was a different offense. It was efficient. They were up and down the field. Kyle Shanahan puts his guys in good positions to win. And I said this yesterday, and one of the main reasons I didn't think Nick Mullins would go out and have an historic night, when you start to look at the historic benchmarks he hit last night. I mean, it was like 15. I was reading through them this morning.
Yeah,
I didn't think that would happen. But I did know that Kyle Shanahan is a guy that does put his guys in position to win. And on the other side, his guys are playing for him. And I said that, you know, the biggest thing for me is I had seen body language with the Oakland Raiders. This is a team that has quit. And on the other side, with only winning, losing six consecutive games, San Francisco was still scratching and clawing and playing for Kyle Shanahan.
Nick Mullins made some money last night, I think. I know it's one game.
Boy, I don't know. So you think he Matt Flynn this thing is what you're saying?
Not yet, but he looked good last night, and that get on national TV with no other games going on. That's the first step to making some cash.
I don't know. I mean, maybe so. He may get more starts with San Francisco. Shanahan says he's not opposed to starting him over Bethard, and when Bethard comes back, you know, healthy. I mean, what do they got to lose?
Well,
here's
what I would ask you guys: why would you start a guy that's lost six consecutive games?
Yeah.
And look, and I don't think Bethard's bad by any means. He's a gutty guy.
I mean, you don't get to play the Raiders every week, though, Lance. That's the problem.
But guess who your next game's against? The New York Giants.
That's almost like playing the Raiders.
So that's back to back wins because they actually host the New York Giants. And if just the way the offense was last night, the quick release, how he played with the confidence, the poise, not turning the football over. I don't know how you don't start Nick Mullins against New York.
Do you know the Raiders still haven't played their two games against the Chiefs? Can you imagine what Pat Mahomes will do to that team?
But Nick Mullins from Southern Miss, Spain Park, wearing that number 4 out there last night. He has a relationship from his Southern Miss days with Brett Favre, Rockstar Cut 10, as they do on Thursday night. Nick Mullins, the MVP of the game, goes on out there. And he's with all the guys and young ladies on the old NFL Network set, and all of a sudden they got a special caller who's on line 2 to talk to Nick Mullins, and it's our copper knee brace friend, Brett Favre, from down in southern Mississippi.
Hey, Nick, I couldn't be more proud for you. What a great start. No, but I'm not surprised at your success, and I wish you the best. You know that.
Yeah. Appreciate that. Thank you. I got most respect, and I'm glad I can just represent Southern Miss the way you did.
How well do you know Favre?
Pretty well.
You got the same agent with Bus, right?
Yeah, for sure.
They hired a Bus Cook.
Oh, yeah, Bus. Thank you.
Yeah, he broke all my records. How could I not remember it?
We threw it a lot more than you guys did. You know that.
I'll be completely 100% honest, and I sent Nick a message prior to the game earlier today. I'm not surprised in how he played one bit. He did that at Southern Miss. He handles himself with tremendous class. He's a very bright football mind. All he needed, honestly, was an opportunity, and he got it, and he made the most of it. So I'm not surprised one bit.
An opportunity, and he got it, and the legend giving him a phone call.
You know, he joins, and this is just one of those benchmarks we mentioned. Mark Bolger, Ryan Fitzpatrick, and Marcus Mariota as the only players over the past 25 years to throw for three or more touchdowns in their first start.
It
doesn't happen.
It's probably, I don't have this in front of me, but he was an undrafted free agent, right? Mullins was. So, it may be the greatest start we've ever seen from any undrafted free agent.
Yeah, even I go back to Kurt Warner, and you guys remember when Trent Green goes down to the preseason of the 99 season. Kurt Warner, the next week, gets a start against the Baltimore Ravens, and he was just really average. And it got better second week to third week to fourth week. But for first game to roll out there in the middle of the season and to put up these numbers, and again, to not turn the football over, I just thought it was a really, really good performance against a bad, bad Raiders team. We know that. But still, for San Francisco to play with passion like that, you got to give. That's what you're supposed to do as a professional. You've got no shot of doing anything this season, but you go out there with the third-string quarterback, and you at least play for 60 minutes.
We don't talk schedule strength, though, in the NFL. Nick Mullins, the MVP last night. We do talk schedule strength when it comes to UCF, and they won their 21st straight game last night. They beat Temple. Our buddy Jeff Collins, a valiant effort last night with Temple, 52-40. Injuries and a good offensive UCF team caught up with them. But I saw the stat last night, 127 out of 130 was their strength of schedule coming into that game, UCF. Out of 130 teams at the Division I level, the FCS level, or excuse me, the FBS level, they're 127. That was not intentional.
Freudian slip.
That was not intentional, UCF. 127 after 130, and they barely beat a very average Memphis team early in the year. Now, last night, I actually think Temple's a pretty good team, but UCF's defense gave up a ton of yardage. They win the game 52-40. Did last night change your perception on them being the number 12 team in the country, even moving them up or moving them down?
Yeah, it did, because I thought their defense was better. I thought they had a little better defense than what we saw last night.
So you think less of them than the number 12 team
overall,
in the
country? Overall. Now, I was impressed what they did to Temple's defense. I mentioned this yesterday. It's the best defense by a long shot they faced, and they moved the ball very well against Temple. And look, I know it's Temple. You got to get past the logo and the name on the side of the helmet. For that level, for the American, that's a really, really good defense. I mean, they were 30th in the country in points per game and scoring defense.
Yeah, but you can't have Anthony Russo, who began the season
that's my
with
point.
Jeff Collins, as a backup quarterback, to go 31 of 52, 444, and four touchdowns.
Lance, not just that, but the total yards they put on them. They outgained Central Florida in the loss, 670 total yards they put on them. That's not a good defense.
Again, Dunaway, they're good, winning 21 consecutive games, obviously. They're not nearly as good as they were last year. And when you've got a guy like McKenzie Milton who's playing in the AAC, you're going to win a ton of games. They're going to beat Navy next week. They're going to beat Cincinnati in a couple of weeks in Orlando. I think in Tampa against South Florida, because South Florida offensively and their ability to run the football with two different backs, I think that game gets really interesting. And then obviously the week following, more than likely against Houston in the AAC championship game, I'd be really surprised if they don't lose one of those two games.
If Auburn had beaten UCF last year in the Peach Bowl,
would have shut everything down.
We would not be having this discussion.
No, it would have been a fun Thursday night game to watch.
They would not be nearly as annoying as they are. But they are. And look, I guess you can't blame them. Nobody else is going to have a voice for UCF if they're not going to have a voice for themselves. So I guess you got to rally and you got to, you know, wave the flag if you're the Knights. I mean, it is impressive in today's college football to win 21 against anyone in a row.
Yeah, I mean, Milton's a good quarterback, obviously.
Playmaker, man.
Yeah, he's really a playmaker. I mean, he's a good quarterback, and he'd make some plays against good defenses, I think, on the highest levels.
I think Milton would start for, you know, more than half the SEC teams.
Yeah, probably so. And he would make some plays, and he's got some playmakers there, but the way Armstead ran the ball on them last night and the way Russo carved them up, I'd hate to see them against a high-level Power 5 offense. I mean, I just don't know what Ohio State's offense or Alabama's offense or Clemson's offense would do to that defense.
Go basketball terms with me, okay? And I know we're coming off a year where in the NCAA tournament I saw a 16 upset a 1.
Right.
I understand that, coming off of that. But if we were 8 deep and we were playing a seeded 1-8 college football tournament and somehow UCF was placed in this thing, Would it look like, would it, I guess I'm saying Alabama versus UCF, would it look like a 116 matchup, a 215 in the NCAA tournament, a 314? How far down the line? Obviously, it wouldn't be an 8-9 matchup. How far down the line of a first round?
A 215.
A 215.
Yeah, I mean, okay. 314 typically are 10 to 15 point games in college basketball. I think this would be every bit of, I mean, if Alabama wanted to win by 35, I think they win by 35.
So a 215 happens every now and then, a 15 beats a 2.
Yeah.
And this is the first time we saw a 16 beat a 1 this past year in the NCAA tournament. So there would be, you know, they play it 30 times. 15 would beat a 2, one out of every 30 times. We'll say, just throw a number out.
Well, this might be a 116 then, because I think you could play this 30 times and there is zero chance Central Florida could ever beat Alabama.
This would be the NCAA tournament game. I don't know what the seeding is, but it'd be the game where you watch the game and you see that basketball team's a really good player and you say, okay, I see how they won their conference.
Yeah.
I mean, this guy's a stud. But he doesn't have enough around him to beat Duke or North Carolina or whoever, you know, the high-seeded team that is that they're having to play.
You know, we've seen a lot of these. The two best non-BCS Group 5 teams that I've ever seen, probably Ben Roethlisberger and Terry Heppner, a Miami of Ohio team, I think it was back in 2003. And they had one loss, and they were really good. Their one loss was first week against Iowa. And Roethlisberger and that offense, they were legitimate. And then I actually saw a couple of Boise State teams.
Right.
You know, 6, 7, 8 years ago under Chris Peterson, that I think could hang with any top 10 team. But outside of that, it's just not even close. And I would love to see major carnage and chaos and have a bunch of two-loss conference champions and throw UCF in there undefeated this year.
So you'd love to see 1-4.
I really
Alabama
would.
Alabama versus UCF.
And because I think even Nick Saban would realize this. They don't deserve to be here. We're going to beat them by 70, and we're going to shut down this argument where we never have to see this again.
Well, what's going to happen again, and I promise you, they're going to win out. If they beat Houston, they're going to be in this New Year's Six bowl game again. And by Stuart Mandel and a lot of bowl projections, they're going to end up playing an SEC team, third place SEC or fourth place SEC.
So like a Kentucky. And by the way, they would hang with Kentucky because Kentucky's offense.
Yeah, they're going to play a Kentucky or an LSU.
I know you say that about Kentucky's offense, Lance, but after watching the way Armstead ran last night, I think Benny Snell would carve them right up, man.
No, I'm not saying
he'd have 250 on them.
But I think Kentucky's that kind of team in one of those bowl situations.
That yucks it up?
Yeah. I think UCF could actually hang with them and, you know, maybe even, you know, one out of four times be able to beat them. And, boy, can you guys imagine if they go undefeated again this year and beat an SEC team?
Never hear the end of it.
Yeah, that's what happened last year. And it was, you know, more gas in the fire because Auburn beat Alabama and Alabama was the national champions. And UCF did what they did. Now 21 straight as they beat Temple last night. And it was a tough beat, too. A 10-point spread, 9-point game there late and no reason to kick the field goal. In fact, it was risking a chance to lose the game. And Heupel kicks it and it beats you in Vegas as well, 52-40, or it helps you win, depending on which side you're on. All right, Scoobs on a cell phone first. Hey, Scoobs, how are you?
I'm doing good, Jim. How are you?
Good.
I got a couple of questions. I'm going to try to shoot through them. My first question dealing with Temple last night, if you was to put them in the mix in the college football playoff, I guess this question would go to Lance. If you go into the top 10 teams that were selected Tuesday night, I was iffy about Kentucky because of their, I guess, inept offense at times. But seeing how Temple carved them up, don't you believe, Lance, out of every team that's in the top 10, that they would basically beat UCF by 2 scores or more?
Yeah, probably. You know, I guess it depends on the circumstances. Once you get to a regular bowl game like you did with UCF and Auburn last year, it's kind of hard to get motivation on certain sides. I think Kentucky and Washington State would only be the two teams that wouldn't be double-digit favorites against UCF.
What would you see Washington State as? Like, what, 7 or 8?
Yeah, probably 8 to 9. Kentucky 7 to 8 to 9. Yeah, but I think both would be a shade under 10. Every other team in the top 10, healthy double-digit favorites.
That's what I thought. Okay, second question. So I heard Greg McElroy talking the other day about something that was dealing with man coverage in the LSU game against Alabama. Do you think that Alabama, I mean, or the LSU can really afford to run a man coverage on that? I mean, do you think that? I mean, I just don't see how that they can play man.
Yeah, they've got three NFL quality defensive backs. So yeah, they'll be able to run a man coverage. Does that mean they'll shut them down every time? No, but they have by far the best defensive backs Alabama's faced to this point, right? Three guys that'll play in the league.
Yeah, and if you're going to bring pressure, you're going to be a man a lot anyway. So, I mean, I think that's – look, I mean, if you go watch film on Tagovailoa, I'm sure you can watch people try to zone him, people try to man him, and him pick both of them apart. So, you know, I'm sure are stats out there that tell you which one he's better against, and those coaches have access to that. But if you think your strength is manning up and playing a guy and right. challenging a receiver, you may as well do it.
But I guarantee you, every quarterback, the less time they have the ball, that helps the defensive backs, and it also makes them make quick decisions. That's what Tua has been fantastic at. But if you're going to make a bad decision, usually you make a quick bad decision, not a long drawn out bad decision. If he's back there all day long with no pressure. Yeah, just about anybody will pick you apart.
Right. Okay. Well, my follow up last thing. Did the three man front? Did they give y'all any snacks yet? I got to find out.
Snacks?
Yeah.
No.
With the pig, so you're gonna have to call them out on it. I said, hey, look, this was last week. I seen them, and I said, look, you got to share these things with the Jocks Roundtable.
Nope.
So you got to put them on Front Street, man.
Nope. All right.
Thank you.
I appreciate you letting us know. We don't have as good of friends as we thought we did, I guess.
Right now, we need to do four downs, brought to you by Vulcan Tire.
First down.
Big game up in Lexington, Georgia and Kentucky. When Georgia played LSU, they had rushers who gained 145, 66, and 64 yards. Three guys, 64 yards or more. Does Benny Snell go over 99.5 against that defense?
I think he does. I think, and this is kind of going to kind of be the gauge whether or not Kentucky's able to win this game. But he is a guy right now that is leading the SEC in rushing 117 yards per game, and I think he's right around the average. I think he goes over.
LSU had a guy who ran for 145. Joe Burrow ran for 66.
He did. I'm going to take a shade under. I think this is a kind of a lower scoring, tighter game, so I'm going to take a shade under that number for Benny Snell.
But if Benny goes a shade under 99.5, what does Terry Wilson do? Because Burrow ran for 66. Terry Wilson, a much better runner.
Yeah. I mean, he could. I would prefer him try to run than throw against Georgia the way he's thrown.
Second down.
All right. In 2021, is Mark Richt the coach in the opener for Miami? Because all of a sudden, you're starting to see people say the shine is coming off Mark Richt in this little Miami experiment that he went to.
Yeah, I'm going to say no. But if it really depends on Mark Richt, though. If Mark Richt wants to be there, I think he'll be there because Miami can't keep cycling through coaches from Larry Coker to Randy Shannon
but
to
that would be
Al 17, Golden.
18, 19, 20, 4 years.
That's a long time. Yeah. You're right.
Yeah, I mean, that's just it is a long time, but still, they continue to just churn through coaches. And I think we got to get to the point where maybe Miami's just not going to be the program it once was. But the disturbing thing is, Miami, if they were to lose this week and lose next week, it would be another four-game losing streak under Mark Richt. This would be the third four-game losing streak since he's taken back over.
These are not great teams they're playing, though, Lance. Duke and at Georgia Tech.
I think they win this week.
Okay, so you think they beat Duke this week, and then they're at Georgia Tech, at Virginia Tech, and Pitt to finish. They've got a chance to actually finish okay and maybe put a little shine back on that deal.
Sort of what he did at Georgia.
Yeah, a little bit. You're right.
Third down.
Jimbo Fisher takes Texas A&M into Jordan-Hare Stadium on Saturday. Sounds like the beginning of a...
It really does. Like Leonard's losers.
But Jimbo's got his team going down there. He was 78-17 in 95 games at Florida State. 78-17.
Okay, that's pretty good.
Okay, half of those wins, though, were with Jameis Winston.
Okay. In 95 games at Texas A&M, will he be 70-25 or better?
No. I'm willing to roll out how many steaks you want on 70-25.
As many steaks as you want. Lance will go side of beef. I think he's going to have success there. He won't have it to that degree. It's a tougher sledding in the SEC West to put up those kinds of numbers. But I still think Jimbo Fisher can be a 10-win coach at Texas A&M.
You guys have overvalued. Now, the one thing that would get away from me is his ability to, let's just say they're recruiting well right now. They're doing it as a collective group. So I think it's really interesting what's going on with that A&M's recruiting right now. So if you get, you know.
I see you winking and nodding over there.
Well, if you get top five classes in, year out, I think they're going to have some success.
And he did that at Florida State. He recruited well there. The guy knows how to recruit.
I mean, 70-25. Yeah. I mean, that's I mean, how many years of that is four losses to get to 25, right? That's a lot. That's eight.
It'd be about six.
Yeah. I mean, I think he's going to be a 9-3 coach. Is about what he'll have.
Yeah.
R.C. Slocum again.
You get six to eight seasons of average football, of never even being in Atlanta. Okay, fourth down. Okay, we've seen Urban Meyer this week. If you had to put money on it right now, how many more seasons of Urban Meyer?
I'll go this season and then one more.
Yeah, that's
one
what
more.
I was going to say. One more after this year, yeah.
One more. That's our four downs today, brought to you by Vulcan Tire. Chris says, how do you play man when Alabama comes out five wide with Judy, Rugg, Smith, Waddle, and Jacobs?
That's tough.
That's what you do, though. Yep. It's what you have to do.
You're either that or you're not, right? Yeah, I mean, that's your identity or not.
You're either going to play him or you're not going to play him.
Yeah. It's not easy. Nobody's saying it's easy, but you got to have a plan somehow.
Other than UCF beating Temple in their 21st straight win last night, 52-40, last night, Northern Illinois stayed unbeaten in the MAC, beating Akron, our buddy Terry Bowden, 36-26. And Ohio blasted Western Michigan to stay in the hunt for the MAC championship, 59-14. In that game now, Ohio University is going to their 10th straight bowl game. Since between 1969 and 2004, they had 24 losing seasons. But since Frank Solich took over, they've been a consistent winning program. That will be his legacy, that he's a consistent winning coach. Not a great coach, but a consistent winner. A big win last night for Solich in Ohio.
Well, still more success post-Osborne at Nebraska than anybody. I mean, they've tried and tried.
Again, this is a guy that averaged over 10 wins a season, a guy that played for a national championship, and just really a heck of a coach. Not a fun style necessarily to watch, but he is a steady Eddie coach.
Two games tonight, Pitt and Virginia. And Colorado and Arizona, two of a few games tonight, but those are two of them. Last night on his coach's show, Nick Saban, with an unbelievable quote, he was asked about, if you win the toss in Baton Rouge on Saturday night, do you take the ball or do you defer? And he said, to be honest with you, quote, I hope we elect to kick ass is what I hope we do. Crowd erupted. A little confidence from Nick Saban. Here's Ed Orgeron, coach of LSU, on the confidence he has in Joe Burrow and the relationship Burrow has with his teammates.
He told me that the first time that he thought that it was his team, it was during the Georgia game. He says, Coach, I finally feel this is my team. It takes a while, you know, but I want to compliment our football team for welcoming him in, Joe. He was an outsider. He came in. He kept his mouth shut. He earned his position. But our team did a great job of rallying around Joe Burrow, and it's our team I want to give the credit to.
That's it. Ed Orgeron talking about Joe Burrow, and that is what is one of the amazing storylines of this weekend, is that here's a grad transfer who has his team at number three in the country, and really he's better off than if he had stayed at Ohio State.
Yeah, look, and Dwayne Haskins is obviously the better quarterback that's putting up massive numbers, but LSU cannot beat Alabama without exceptional play at the quarterback position. I mean, let's go back to the losses, and we've gone through this, that Nick Saban's had at Alabama. It's been, on the other side, great quarterback play. And Joe Burrow is steady, and he's not making mistakes, but I don't think he has got the ability to be able to beat an Alabama defense and make consistent throws for 60 minutes. And again, teams that have beaten Alabama have been able to do that. These quarterbacks have been exceptional college quarterbacks, and I think Joe Burrow is a good college quarterback. He's not good enough to beat Alabama.
Alabama wants to make you one-dimensional, and LSU comes into this game that way just a little bit. So that's what I think scares you if you're an LSU fan, is you've done Alabama's job for them to a certain extent. You're going to have to play well above your season averages. So if you just base it on yards per game passing, who do you think's better, UAB or LSU?
I mean, it's got to be LSU.
Only by two spots, Lance. LSU's averaging 193 a game, UAB averaging 187 a game. And we all know, being around here, that's been UAB's struggle. They've been able to run the ball. They haven't been able to throw it consistently. But, I mean, LSU's 102 in the country, Jim, throwing the football. And that's a flaw in their offensive game. And that is generally bad news for Alabama. You have to be so balanced. You can't just try to win with one aspect of the game against an Alabama defense under Nick Saban.
When I saw them play in person, though, LSU at Auburn, the numbers don't wow you, but it seems like they make timely passes.
I will say that for him. Yeah, no, I'll say that for him, because that game you watched, Jim, he was 15 of 35, which is 43%, but he threw for 249 and a touchdown. And I will say that for Burrow. He makes timely throws. I mean, he can be bad the whole game and make three or four timely throws that change everything.
I can't give you a comparison off the top of my head of a quarterback who made a living of not putting up big numbers, but just made the right throws at the right time to win. You know, I picture Troy Aikman's career being that way with the Cowboys in the NFL. I can't think of one in college that didn't wow you with numbers. He just made the right throws at the right time. Greg in Pell City next with us. Hey, Greg, how are you?
I'm doing well, man. I disagree with Aikman. Man, he was deadly. He's probably one of the most accurate passers I can ever remember. But let me ask you this. Who's the better coach, Ogeron or Malzahn, in your opinion?
I would still say Malzahn. I mean, he's coached for two SEC championships, won one of them, and coached in a national championship game. That's better than anything Orgeron's ever done.
I mean, I guess the accomplishments, you would have to go Malzahn. I'd really like to see top 10 wins right now, though.
I mean, let me just pause here, Greg. Lance, if Greg had called us and asked us this question in December, what would you have said?
We would have laughed.
Yeah, we would have laughed. We'd have definitely said Malzahn. So I'm not going to let one bad season change that aspect of it, Greg.
Well, what I'm getting at is I'm wondering, you know, beating Saban in Alabama seems to be a free ticket to a lottery. If Coach O was able to pull that off this weekend, which I mean, he could be playing for something like that. I mean,
trust me,
built this game up. What's that?
I said, trust me, he's going to cash in. If you beat Alabama, they tear this deal up and he's got a new one.
Yeah, I mean, look, can you imagine? I mean, if Kentucky beats Georgia and LSU beats Alabama, LSU's in the college football playoff.
Absolutely. Well, I believe the week off really hurts LSU, in my opinion. To me, Bama's clearly the better team. They're just getting themselves well, ready to play. They were tired. And I believe sometime a week off will give you too much time to get just the way Ogeron sounds. I mean, he's not hiding the fact this is a huge game. He said the guys are ready to play Monday. And I just think they're going to come in, and as soon as Bama punches them in the mouth, they're going to get down because he's got them so – he might be have too much stuff. You know what I'm saying? You can over-prepare.
Yeah, no, or you peak too early. I mean, it's all the coaching cliches. I do think that's, you know, what sets good coaches and bad coaches apart is psychologically knowing how to deal with your team to make sure that they're psychologically the most ready when the game's actually played. Thank you, Greg. And we talked about this in the old game of the century, which this hasn't had that type of hype, obviously. But we've always talked about how being on the road might have been a slight advantage for LSU there because of all the stuff that's going on at home. And I kind of feel the same way about Alabama this week. I think with everything, with game day there, with all that's going on in Baton Rouge, being the road team might have some sort of advantage in that aspect of it. You'd still choose to play it at home. Yeah, I get that.
At least in preparation.
Yeah.
Ron in Birmingham is next with us. Hey, Ron, how are you?
Good morning, guys. I hope you're having a great day.
Wonderful. Thank you.
Great. I do not pretend to be any kind of offensive guru or coach or anything like that, but I do think one thing that will happen with all the matchup talk about between the defensive backs, LSU, the wide receivers of Alabama, I do think that Irv Smith is primed, or the tight end position is primed, to have a pretty good game this time, and I think they will utilize him a pretty good bit. What do you guys think?
Well, I mean, they have been lately. This is a guy that has been a huge part of Alabama's game plan, you know, against Arkansas, against Missouri. I mean, they've gone to him a lot early in the game, and I do think he's a matchup nightmare. And when you've got the receivers you've got with Ruggs and Judy and Waddle and Devontae Smith, if he's healthy, you got to pay more attention to them.
Well, yeah, I mean, he's running one-on-one with linebackers nonstop.
That's a bad match.
It's really interesting how utilized he is this year when you go back and you look at O.J. Howard's ability. And we never saw O.J. Howard until the calendar turned to January.
Yeah.
We just didn't. And by the way, for top 10 wins, do you guys want to guess who's got more, Ed Orgeron or Gus Malzahn?
I'd guess Orgeron.
I was doing the same thing that you were. Go ahead.
Well, it's 5-7.
Yeah.
Orgeron five.
Coming into the year.
Orgeron's got five?
Yeah, so it's changed since a year.
No. Oh. So Orgeron, it is five. He had two coming into the year. He's got three this year, so he's got five.
Okay.
Gus has got one with Washington, so it's 5-7. Wow. Or 7-5, Gus.
Well, hats off to SEC Mike. He has it updated to the second then. I thought this was coming into the year.
Yeah, but that's pretty close, though.
Yeah.
I never would have thought that.
Yeah, 7-9 and 5-10 was the number I saw, but I thought that was coming into the year. So, you know, both of those not on the winning side of games against top 10, but that there are a few coaches that end up on that side of it. Nick Saban, 27-9 in those games. WDE2U writes in and says, what's Gus's record versus number one teams compared to Coach O's? It's going to be better. Got two last year. Got one in 2013, just off the top of my head.
That might be his three, but that could be enough.
That could be enough for a lot of coaches, yeah, right there.
You get three, that's more than most.
Cole standing by. Hey, Cole, welcome in this morning. How are you, man?
I'm good. How y'all doing?
Awesome. Thank you.
Well, I got a question for y'all guys. I was thinking, do y'all think Les Miles will ever coach again in the SEC? And if y'all think he does, what school do you think it would be?
SEC, no. Coach again, maybe. I still doubt that he ever coaches again, but his name was mentioned last night in the Maryland conversation. Maryland's job's open, and Les says he's interested in that job.
Well, you know, he's a Big Ten guy originally, you know, a guy that played for Bo Schembechler at Michigan. Maryland wouldn't be a horrible fit because you need a little stability there. I just think kind of out of sight, out of mind for Les Miles. I think he's a good coach. What he was able to do at Oklahoma State, obviously what he was able to do at LSU. I don't know how many fan bases would be excited about Les Miles, but I don't necessarily think he would do a bad job.
I think Maryland's would, though, wouldn't
maybe.
You? I mean, it's a guy that's won a national championship. If you're Maryland, how are you ever going to get a national championship? Coach, I saw mention of Butch Jones.
Yeah, that's what I was about to say. Yeah. According to reports, Butch Jones would be interested
I don't think they would be excited about that at all. But those are both safe guys in a really tricky situation in Maryland. They're getting all that back on the rails. You need a safe experience guy to do that, I think.
Those guys have won, and they haven't embarrassed, you know, their program with any issues other than not winning the games they should win. Time for our spotlight today, brought to you by our friends at Baumhauer's. We try to tell you what Monday's headlines are going to be today. Hit it, Rocky.
It's the Baumhauer's Victory Grill Spotlight.
Monday's big storyline.
And it's brought to you by our friends at Baumhauer. All right, Brownie, start us off. Give me Monday's headlines from a big game this weekend or just any game.
It's in the Baton Rouge Advocate, Jim.
Oh, all right.
Whiteout leads to blue bayou.
Oh.
See, Devin White's out, and they're going to be blue because Alabama beats them.
Blue Bayou, an old song, right?
So is that Linda Ronstadt? Linda Ronstadt, yeah.
How about I got that one right?
You did. Of all the ones you got, Blue Bayou.
I'm a big Ronstadt fan.
My mom used to sing that. Have that playing in the background on our AM radio when she was making Hamburger Helper back in the mud puddle.
Oh, wow.
That was fantastic.
Yeah, buddy.
I'm going to go the other SEC big game on Saturday, 2:30 in Lexington, and I'm also going to use a 70s music reference. Ooh, that Snell.
Can't you smell that Snell?
Kentucky clinches East.
Ooh, that Snell.
Give me three Snells. Give me three. Sweet Snell. No. I, too, am going to go to the Kentucky game because it's so easy.
Snellbird!
It is so easy with Benny Snell. Snell's pace wins SEC race.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah,
I like that.
It's a slow pace, so like the snail.
The rabbit. They're slow.
So you think now that Kentucky's going to win this game too?
No, I think Georgia's going to win.
Oh, you're just doing a fun
that.
Headline.
I just needed Monday's headline today.
Sorry.
I needed to fill a segment brought to you by our friends at Baumhauer's.
Just in time for football season, they've got two all-new wing sauces, the Yellowhammer wings, the Screaming Eagle wings. Come try them both while catching all the weekend's biggest games on the nearly 100 HD TVs at Baumhauer's Victory Grill. Legendary fun. Legendary food. So you're just going to send those newspapers to a third world country after it doesn't work out?
It's going to be a weird Lexington Herald leader when they lose the game.
I will go ahead and tell you that my belief on that game for Dunaway After Dark, I had already printed my Kentucky logo, wasting the ink. My wife is going to gripe at me about that. And then I flipped to Georgia, after I saw where Benny Snell had written a piece for the Players Tribune, and it had come out yesterday, where he talks about the motivation he has and nobody recruited him and the star system and all of that. And when I saw that, I was like, oh, this is not the kind of stuff you write or you do before you play Georgia.
I think
instantly flipped the script there and said, give me Georgia.
Yeah, I think that's the thing that fuels some of these Kentucky players and Benny Snell in particular is that chip on their shoulder that they're Kentucky. We're a basketball school. And you guys doubt us because the logo on our helmet. I think they have to have that chip on the shoulder. I don't know that should dissuade you from your pick.
Yeah, I don't think that's a bad thing.
Yeah.
Here is the ending line. And I guess in a way, maybe the doubters were kind of right. We aren't a good team. This is actually a great team. Can I get a snail? Yeah.
Yeah. Not crazy about the end there, but
yeah.
All right.
But I do think they have to have that chip on their shoulder. Well, you're stuck in Friday traffic. Rockstar going to give you something to look forward to tonight with his viewing menu presented by Phone Restore.
7 p.m. on Flix tonight. One of the best dog names in cinema history, The Jerk, is on tonight.
Why don't you just go ahead and say it?
You can't.
Oh.
7 p.m. on TNT, one that I hated the first time I saw it, but it kind of grows on you, Step Brothers.
Never seen it.
Never seen it.
Okay, that's tonight. And then 9 p.m. on Cinemax, a new season of Mike Judge, Tales from the Bus. We did like all the country stars.
I've heard that was pretty awesome.
It's really funny. This time he's doing funk music. He's doing George Clinton, where it's just animated, where he tells stories from their tour buses and everything. With George Jones last year was incredible.
I saw bits and pieces of that.
Merle Haggard.
And wanted to go back and watch that series. Is last year's episode somewhere on streaming?
They've been repeating them like they did the George Jones one a couple days ago. But tonight's the premiere for George Clinton.
George Clinton has to be amazing.
Yeah. He's doing it for the premiere, yes.
All right. That's good stuff from Rockstar. I did want to get back into some college football here. In this whole weekend coming up, Kentucky senior linebacker Jordan Jones, it was announced yesterday, broken hand. He's still going to play. But in that showdown, so many little nuances. What makes you think Kentucky wins this game? What makes you think, what happens if Kentucky is the SEC Eastern Division champion?
Look, I agree with Klatt that it doesn't seem like a great team by any means, and they should have lost last week. They just find ways to win. And even in the game against Texas A&M where you don't cross midfield, you find a way to end up in overtime. And look, Georgia's a much more talented team. But Jake Fromm, a 3.9 QBR when facing pressure this season, and you got a guy on the edge in Josh Allen, 24.5 career sacks. I think they'll be able to pressure Fromm. I think they're going to take the runaway. Swift and Holyfield, it just hasn't been crisp and fluid running the football. I don't like Jim Chaney's play call. I thought the game got away from Florida in the fourth quarter. If Georgia can't force turnovers, I think Kentucky wins this game. And I think on the other side, I think Kentucky will be able to force turnovers. Benny Snell bounces back 100 yards plus. I think the atmosphere is going to be electric. I just like Kentucky. I think it's a perfect spot.
I saw an anonymous coach say that Florida was missing some players in its secondary and couldn't do what it usually does, that Kentucky will be able to expose Georgia like LSU did. And we'll be able to make Jake Fromm have a bad day.
Ooh.
We'll see if that plays out. But that was one anonymous coach looking at that game tape. Tonight, UCF, 21st straight win, 52-40 over Temple. Couple of games tonight, Pittsburgh, Virginia, Colorado, and Arizona. Nick Saban on his coach's show said, quote, when asked about winning the coin toss, what do you want, the offense? Or I would defer, would you want the ball or defer? He said, quote, to be honest, I hope we elect to kick ass. Is what I hope we do, end quote from Nick Saban last night. Here's Damian Harris on just how the rivalry is playing LSU and how intense this game ends up being.
It's just, that's what the game is about. You know, two absolutely dominant physical teams in the SEC, the toughest conference in America, going head-to-head and one of the biggest games in college football. I mean, you can't really put it into words. You know, it's just one of those big-time games, one of those almost a rivalry, if you will. You know, their fans don't like us. Our fans don't like them. Anytime we play each other, it's just a hostile environment. And, you know, like you said, it's one of those knockout 15-round fights, incredibly physical game, and we're ready for it.
Almost a rivalry.
That jumped out at me. Almost a rivalry. Yeah. I mean, it's been a one-sided one for sure.
The other game in the SEC that will decide the SEC Eastern Division, Georgia and Kentucky, Mark Stoops on the Fitzsimmons and Herb Street podcast.
The situation changes every week, whether you're going on the road, a hostile environment, home in a big game, whatever. I mean, our team has done what it had to do to put ourselves in a position to play a big game and to be relevant in the SEC and in the East. So, you know, I appreciate our team's effort and our coaches and what we've done to get to this point, but we really just try to stay in our routine and just have a typical Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and so on.
Going to be hard to do that this week, but Kentucky gets their chance at Kroger Field at 2:30 on CBS this week. And finally, last night in the NFL, what a night from Nick Mullins, the former Spain Park High School quarterback, then at Southern Miss. He made his NFL debut last night, and he leads the 49ers to a 34-3 victory, 262 yards and three touchdowns from Nick. And Brett Favre and him played at the same school, Southern Miss. He's got that number four on. And Nick Mullins talks about what Brett Favre means to him and what he said in pregame.
He just told me how proud of me he was. He sent me a message before the game. He said, no pressure, just be yourself. And that's what I try to do before the game and during the game. And so I just try to stay calm out there and lead the offense. And obviously, we got some veterans on the O-line, so it was just a very collective effort.
John Gruden said when he took this job, if I can't get it done now, I'm not just going to sit here and take Oakland's money.
He's taking their money right now. Well, what he'll do is, hey, we're going to transition to Las Vegas.
I'll take Las Vegas' money, not Oakland's.
I stockpiled these number one picks. I need to let this play out for a couple of years. He's going to take their money for at least 3 or 4 years. I don't think there's any doubt.
That money's too good.
But 2 years ago, and I understand they are obviously knee-deep into a rebuild now, but just 2 years ago.
Oh, before the Carr finger injury, they were arguably the best team in the AFC. They won 12 games. They go to the postseason. And Connor Cook gets the start in Houston.
They were a young team that could have gone to the Super Bowl that year, and the future was out in front of them. I don't understand why they're in a rebuild mode now.
Well, a couple of things have happened. They didn't really have a great semblance of a running game then, but Carr was that good. And the offensive line was one of the best in the NFL. The offensive line has become patchwork. It's banged up. Gruden pointed that out last night. Khalil Mack was leading what was – you know, a kind of a middle-of-the-road defense, but they were making plays, and it's quickly falling apart.
Some people around here want to see A.J. McCarron play for them. I don't think anybody thinks he can be a long-term starter in the NFL, but do you think you might see them take a look at him?
Well, they did last night.
Well, I mean, in garbage time, right?
Yeah, and it didn't work out well.
Yeah.
I don't think so. I think they're married to Carr, at least for right now.
Here's a good stat. UAB, I've never seen really this stat publicized, but I did on The Athletic the other day. It's called a stop rate. And UAB's number one in the country in stop rate. They have been successful stopping the other teams, their opponents' drives, on 84% of the drives this year. And that's number one in the country. Now, as you would imagine, a lot of the teams at the top of the college football playoff rankings are very high in stop rate. It's a defensive stat, obviously, and UAB's number one in the country in this. They're number three in total defense. This UAB defense is doing unbelievable stuff, but now they're at home against Texas San Antonio, and it's almost like the cat's out of the bag about this UAB team. Not a secret around the country. They're up to a 22-point favorite in this game. That's a big number as the Roadrunners come to town.
Well, you look at UAB and you mention the fact this team's 7-1 against the number, and 7 of their 8 games have gone under because their defense has been so dominant. 6 straight wins for the Blazers. They've only given up 35 points over their last 5 games, 3 shutouts this season. And when you look at the Roadrunners, this is a team that has no offense. You don't have a running back in rotation that is averaging more than 3.8 yards per carry. Not going to be shocked at all if UAB pitches their fourth shutout against the Roadrunners.
They've got that old school model UAB does right now of running the football to shorten the game and playing really good defense.
Yeah, and it works out.
Yeah, I mean, they're the best rushing offense in Conference USA, and they're the best defense in Conference USA, and they are shortening the game with their running game. They don't throw it very effectively, but they're shortening the game enough that their defense, Jim, isn't out there on the field a ton, and I mean, it's paying off. It's the reason they are what they are right now. And if they throw another shutout, Lance,
yeah, I'd be almost crazy. As shocked if the Roadrunners beat UAB than LSU beating Alabama.
I'm glad all of you enjoyed Joel Klatt on the show. If you missed it, it's podcasted at jocksfm.com right now. He brings a different way of looking at things. Stuart Mandel at The Athletic does a mailbag, and a Washington State fan asked this after the college football rankings, that Washington State, who was unranked in the preseason, and a lot of you gripe about preseason polls to begin with, right?
Right.
They shouldn't exist. The AP preseason polls shouldn't exist. We shouldn't do a poll until a certain point. Well, the college football rankings was the first ranking that came out, and it was just this past Tuesday. Washington State was unranked in the preseason. This Washington State fan, Pac-12 fan, wanted to know, Brown and LT, if Washington State had started out number 10 in the AP poll, would they be higher ranked in the college football playoff rankings right now? Do you think if they had been 10th in the preseason instead of unranked in the preseason, would they be any different in the college football rankings right now, or are they what they are?
No, they wouldn't be any different. And one of the reasons is you would go back to that loss against USC midway through September. That would have dropped them back.
And that loss, Lance, real quick, followed three really bad non-conference games. So they wouldn't have had any pop going into that USC
Alabama
game.
Clemson, Notre Dame, Michigan, Georgia, Oklahoma, those were all top 10 teams to begin with.
It's been a consistent argument from us on this show that you guys always, not you guys, some of you guys, always complain about these preseason polls. I think you're overthinking that. I don't think it would change anything. I mean, you mean to tell me that if they didn't do anything until Tuesday night, Alabama and Clemson wouldn't be 1-2?
Right.
And of course they would.
Washington State would be
better than 8th.
Would be ahead of Oklahoma. Would be ahead of Georgia.
An undefeated Washington State would, but a one-loss Washington State, like Lance said, you go better than that USC loss.
By the way, in the AP preseason poll, Georgia was 3. The first college ball ranking are 6. They probably get the biggest benefit of the doubt of anybody because they were ranked so high and they lost and didn't drop very far. But Ohio State is 5th. In the preseason AP poll, they're 10th in the college football rankings after one loss, so they didn't get a benefit. Oklahoma was 7. They are 7. Michigan was 14, and they're up to number 5. West Virginia was 17, and they're 13 in the rankings. LSU was 25th. They're all the way up to 3.
Yeah.
And Kentucky and Washington State were both unranked. They're 9th and 10th right now with losses. Every week, Rockstar gives us Dr. Lou and Friends. And it's an opportunity for us to really start our football weekend off laughing a little bit. And Dr. Lou does that for us all the time. His friends do it 100% of the time. And it's always brought to you by our friends at Wagner's.
Dr. Lou. The doctor will see you now.
People scored.
This is SEC Court with Judge Gary Danielson. On today's docket, it's the plaintiff, Ed Orgeron, pleading his case against the defendants of the SEC office. Let's take a listen.
All rise. The Honorable Judge Danielson presiding.
Okay. What do we have today, Coach O? What seems to be your complaint?
Ladies and gentlemen, Joy. I'm asking you for the freedom of my linebacker, Devin White. He's a good boy, and the punishment don't fit the crime. Now, I know he does need to serve some sort of suspension. That's why me and my coaching staff have come up with an alternative. You let Devin play this Saturday against Alabama, and we will initiate his punishment of not being able to watch the first two offensive possessions for us against Rice. He will also have to face me in the anger cage for 8 minutes.
Wait. I mean, you can't just come up here with your own punishment, Coach. That's crazy talk. It says right in the rules, right there. You see it? Rule number 3. All right, count with me. 1, 2, right there, 3, right there. That's his punishment, and it's for the game against Alabama.
Mm.
Now, I don't think you have a leg to stand on here.
Mm-hmm, yeah, I do.
But I will say that the guys from the SEC office, I really do appreciate your shirts today. Bailiff Vern, look, they say 1 for the money and 2 for the road. That's actually quite comical right there.
Coach O don't think that's funny at all, Judge Danielson.
Okay, calm down. I will tell you what. How about this for a ruling? If you guys are down by 24 points or more at the end of the third quarter, I will rule that Coach Saban will not be allowed to play Tua at all in the fourth quarter. Does that sound fair?
But Judge, that boy don't ever play in the fourth quarter.
Well, I call it like I think I saw it. That's my ruling. What's next on the docket, Skip?
The plaintiff, Gus Malzahn, is suing his offensive coordinator Chip Lindsey for negligence and his inability to problem solve under pressure. The plaintiff is asking for $32 million.
Whoa! Think you got the wrong judge here, buddy. You need to take this amateur hour stuff back down to Jefferson Pilot Court.
Cue the duck.
Classic.
Cue the duck. That's
Dr. Be a good bailiff, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Burn.
Wow. Dr. Lou's segment brought to you by Wagner's Team Sports.
Don't miss the line. I call it like I think I saw it. It's very good.
A couple of times this year, man, Gary. I know those press boxes at Neyland Stadium a long way away, but that first touchdown where he thought it was knocked out. I always love when he starts counting players on the field. The one.
I get the ball with the marker, too.
Yeah, two. There's three over here. All right.
That's out of that frame right there.
But that UCF win last evening, it was in jeopardy for a while. It does improve their strength of schedule from 127 out of 130. It's gone up a little bit, but not to enough where it's going to be much help in the college football playoff rankings. In fact, you thought last night's showing actually hurt UCF in the national perception of that team.
Well, I mean, I think if you're looking to pick them apart, you would look at that defense and say they gave up 700 yards, basically, and still won, but they gave up 700 yards to Temple, who's not exactly an offensive juggernaut.
Kelly Bryant said he enjoyed his visit to Auburn this past week. He's been to Auburn, North Carolina, Arkansas, and Missouri. Mississippi State is next on his trip there. I'll say what I said last night on our Dunaway After Dark video and our Facebook page at WJOX945. If you are telling me I get Kelly Bryant for 1 year or Bo Nix, I'll take Bo Nix and let him start playing.
I think Auburn fans are getting wary of the rental quarterbacks.
Yeah.
I think they'd like to see a guy come in, develop, and play 3 or 4 years.
Let me grow my own.
Well, and I just
move with Bo Nix.
Yeah,
you know, I saw some flashes towards the end of the season with Kelly Bryant, and then when he runs into a buzzsaw like Alabama, which Auburn's going to have to face every single year, he just looked really pedestrian. And Clemson's got a ton of talent around him. You know, I think it would be interesting because he is an athletic guy and he's got a ton of experience on a championship level. I mean, there are worse options than Kelly Bryant.
The NCAA, I didn't know it took this long, and I'm sorry, Ole Miss fans, it shouldn't take this long, but yesterday ended a nearly six-year process. The 2018 bowl ban stands, but the recruiting restrictions were lifted on Ole Miss, but I don't care what it is, it shouldn't take nearly 6 years.
I agree, and I thought that was, I mean, I guess it's still punishment not going to a bowl game, and who knows, you know, if they would have anyway.
Well, they're one win away.
I know. We'll see if they can get it. I don't know if you watched Ole Miss. They can be a touch inconsistent on you.
Yep.
But I guess that's – I know it's obviously positive. I'd rather have the recruiting restrictions lifted than have the bowl ban lifted.
Absolutely. Helps you quicker long term. As we get ready for the games tonight, Lance, a couple of interesting Friday night games, including this Virginia game, Pitt and Virginia. Both of these teams – still have a shot to make it to the ACC championship game.
Well, if we're being realistic, Virginia does, based on what Bronco Mendenhall's got defensively. I mean, it's a top 20 scoring defense right now. And you look at this team, they're 4-0 straight up and against the number in Charlottesville this year. Bryce Perkins, serviceable quarterback. Jordan Ellis, pretty good running back. But they really get it done with not turning the football over, playing good sound defense. This Pittsburgh team is just average. And I think Pat Narduzzi is a really good coach. And if you would have told me 2 years ago which program's going in a better direction, Mendenhall in Virginia or Narduzzi in Pittsburgh, I would have said Pittsburgh.
Yeah, I mean, they've still got Pitt, Georgia Tech, and Virginia Tech in their division, Jim, but they've certainly got the best road to do it. Of those teams, them and Virginia Tech and Pitt are the ones that control their own destiny. You can knock Pitt out of that.
Yeah, I was just saying, I agree, Virginia seems to be a better team, but one loss in the division in conference Pitt, one loss Virginia, so literally playing for first place.
Yep.
The other game is Colorado and Arizona, and I like Oregon this week as my favorite game on the board, with Chip Kelly coming back to Autzen and Oregon giving up a small number because Arizona beat Oregon's eyes out last week. So I don't know what you're going to get from Arizona or Colorado tonight. They're playing down in Tucson. That's a late night game. But looking at Chip Kelly returning to Oregon tomorrow, UCLA's not very good. He's years away from getting that program relevant. And then Oregon, at one point, looked like they were the best team in the Pac-12. They're falling off. How do you see UCLA, Oregon tomorrow?
Well, I would say tread lightly, Dunaway. I ended up back in Kevin Sumlin in Arizona last Saturday night, and that game wasn't even close. J.J. Taylor ran all over that Oregon defense. Khalil Tate, not running, but throwing the football. They outgained them 465 to 270. And two keys for Oregon coming into this game against UCLA tomorrow. Justin Herbert was pulled because he's in concussion protocol. And your other best weapon, Dylan Mitchell, remains in concussion protocol. So your two best offensive weapons are questionable going into that game, and you're still a double-digit favorite. That's just one of those games based on how bad UCLA looked last Friday against Utah and how bad Oregon looked against Arizona. I probably would stay away
from it. Did you guys, and the answer may be yes, I don't know, but did you guys think Chip Kelly's return to Oregon would be this talked about this little?
Yeah.
I mean, it's not even a storyline.
Yeah, such a low-profile return. When Saban went back to LSU, it was such a huge deal, right?
Yeah.
And you've seen other coaches go back to places, and it's been such a big deal. Here goes Chip Kelly back to Autzen. And
nobody's even noticing.
Could be a rallying cry for Oregon fans, though, after a beatdown this past week. Our last big thing every day on the show is brought to you by the great family-owned ERA King. Our picks in this segment, I'll go first. I'll take Oregon, give the 10.5 as Chip Kelly comes to town, puts a little juice into the stadium and into those players for Kelly to be back. I think they beat up on UCLA pretty bad. Iowa State, I like them against Kansas, minus 14. That's really a good football team. And then Maryland, with everything going on, I'll take the Terps plus 2.5 to get bowl eligible.
Some weird games there from you, Jimmy D.
Matt Canada making his debut.
Almost like I pay for service.
Yeah, I'm going to go with some of the marquee games this week, and I think Texas will bounce back. I love what Todd Orlando's defense did in the second half on the road in Stillwater. I think they're able to limit Will Grier, turn him over a couple of times, and I think Texas will be able to run the football. Like Texas minus 2.5. I've been talking the Cats up all week. I'm getting 8.5 here. I think it's too many points. I think Kentucky plays really good defense against a weird Jim Chaney offense. And then I like Alabama. Everyone in the world is playing the tie, but if I can grab them at 14.5, I'm going to take them. I think they come out. I think they absolutely make a statement. And I heard somebody saying it yesterday. After they win by 28, just going to shut down the college football season.
Well, what's your score? Give me your Alabama score.
I will say Alabama 38-10.
I have 34-10 is what I said.
Yeah, I went 34-17. I like Baylor. They're catching 7.5. They're playing Oklahoma State. I don't think the Cowpokes can get back down on the road after that huge win over Texas. So I'll take Baylor plus the 7.5. Clemson is dominating people, too. Other than Syracuse, they've been so dominant. They're minus 38.5 against Louisville, who is just an awful football team. Petrino is getting forced out. It looks like probably at the end of the year, Clemson minus 38.5 are going to take care of that for them. And then Houston minus 13.5 at SMU. Because SMU's not very good.
Those are our plays. Our last big thing brought to you by ERAKing.com. All right, I'm leaving after our show tonight to head down to Tiger Stadium. A lot of us are making trips this weekend to go watch some football. You've got your Rams and Saints on Sunday. That's a big number, big ticket item down there. Do we ever get a final word on what the biggest price ticket is, the Saints game or the LSU-Alabama?
Yeah, it was Alabama-LSU. I think a get-in right now is $250 to $300, Alabama-LSU. Saints-Rams get in for about $125.
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now. Worst ticket on StubHub, Bama-LSU is $253. That's in section 619 in the upper deck, which is in the corner of the end zone.
A chance that we'll see Rams and Saints again in the playoffs.
Well, there's only one team that I think could throw that out of whack, and that would be Carolina. But I think right now I would go Saints are playing the best. Saints, Rams, 1A and B, and then I think Carolina's right behind them.
The Rams haven't lost yet, and you told us weeks ago you're going to be there and you think the Rams lose this game.
Yeah, it's just such an important game. I think Sean McVay realizes that. But the Rams, three of the last 4 weeks, they haven't played well. They've gotten the wins, but if they play like they do in those games, especially against this weekend against Green Bay, they're going to lose that game.
We all think Alabama's second team. Not Alabama, but Alabama's second team would beat UCF. You can go vote right now at Jock's Roundtable. We even made Alabama 2 a 20-point favorite. Go vote at Jock's Roundtable.
I'm Ryan Kelly with TheHomeLoanExpert.com. We've all heard that mortgage interest rates have started to rise, but I'm not here to scare you like those other banks and mortgage companies. I'm still locking loans in, saving people thousands of dollars a month. TheHomeLoanExpert.com.
The Home Loan Expert, LLC.